That's our intro.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want something more?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
So these guys are really, really totally awesome. Is that better?
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
Super fantastic. Well, they wouldn't be up there if they were super fantastic.
That's right. Yeah. I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Megan.
I'm Brandon. I'm a heroin addict.
Hey, Brandon.
Et cetera.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the fourth step, which is should be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially since we had a good sort of lead into why we need to write inventory. You know, just listening to Brittany and Jamie talk about some of the things that our little minds are capable of doing and creating and so forth. I'll probably talk a lot about the resentment, but I think we're just going to piggyback, you know,
ping
off
pong.
One another. Yeah. Yeah. Ping pong. Anyway, so let's just dive right in. All right, so Brittany kind of segued into this when we wrapped up a little bit ago, which was, you know, in the book, as soon as you do the third step prayer, right, it doesn't waste a lot of time before it says, next we launched into a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. I mean, let's be honest. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I just want to talk about that a little bit, right? So, you know, they discuss this a little bit in talking about our troubles are of our own making, right? But at no point in this is it said, okay, now go into like a self-loathing state of just like psychoanalysis and mental masturbation, right? Like that's not the goal here, right? This is an effort to face and be rid of the things that are blocking us from being capable of executing everything that we just talked about in the third step, right? Like, how do I get to a place where God is actually my employer? How do we even get to this whole, like, connectivity thing? You know, like, what is that? Why can't I just do that now? Like, if all it was about was just, like, turning your will over to God, we could just stop with the third step and move on with our fucking lives. Because, quite frankly, I would like to be at work right now, right? So that's where I'd like to be. But instead, I'm here with you guys. So, you know, so something has to happen next, which is where the spiritual program of action comes into play, right? So there really doesn't need to be a lot of time wasted here. And when I'm sponsoring people, you know, there was a time that, like, early on when, you know, I was still kind of green in how to do that, I would, like, take people through line by line. I don't feel the need to do that anymore because you're not going to retain half the shit anyway. And so, you know, my goal is just to get you into inventory and through the writing process as soon as possible. And me personally, too, right? Like, the first inventory I ever wrote had 70 resentments on it. And one of them was, like, school buses, you know? Like, oh, my, I would kill if a sponsor came to me and was like, I'm resentful at school buses. No, the fuck you're not. No. You know? I'm not talking about your resentment at school buses. Can we get down to causes and conditions, right? And I'll tell them. They're like, oh, I have so many. I'm like, that's great. We're only doing about 10 to
10.
15.
Give me 10.
Yeah.
And I think they put in here, so even in that first paragraph she read, it uses the word launched, vigorous action, at once, and get down, all in that one paragraph. So the fact that this needs to be started very soon is an understatement,
mm-hmm.
I believe. You know what I mean? And Jamie, right at the end of her talk, for those of you that were here, you know, she said at the end of the third step, that last paragraph, it says, this was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. And she said that frustration or whatnot with, like, the light of heaven was not, like, flowing down into her, and she started levitating. Which I think is the idea that some of us get, what's supposed to happen when we take some of these steps. It's like, I'm not feeling it, God, what's going on? You know what I mean? But it says, in effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. Well, just a sentence or two later, they use the words at once again. And when they say at once, it says at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves. So maybe the effect that is being produced is not this light from heaven that's shining down, but for once we're actually able to take an honest look at the way we've been showing up in life by doing an inventory. So maybe that's the effect that at once is felt. So like if I actually take my third step prayer and begin inventory next week, in a month, no, at once, for the first time in my life, I'm actually able to take some action that I never seemed to be able to take for however many years I've been on this planet. That's the effect that's felt at once, not this magical experience that I think the spiritual walk is supposed to be. You know what I mean? Yeah. Real, down to earth, nitty gritty, actually rubber to the road type stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I never thought about that before.
I hadn't either until right then. That was wild.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Okay, so we get the at once thing, I think. So that's pretty clear. So we're just going to dive right into it, right? So what are we taking inventory on, all right? And what is important for us to be looking at? So later on, and by the way, guys, I'm on page 64. We're both on page 64. So we're talking about a fact-finding and fact-facing process. Once again, we're just looking at facts. We're not trying to point out how terrible you are. We're just looking at the facts, right? And later it says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. This woman
more than
had,
alcohol?
Yeah. More than right. Yeah, he made a good point though, right? More than alcohol. Because if you think about various things that can kill an alcoholic or an addict, this book makes a very strong argument that no, resentment is what kills more alcoholics and addicts than anything else. And later we'll kind of talk about why that is. Like, what do they mean by that? But from resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And when the spiritual malady is overcome, we then straighten out mentally and physically. Which is so funny because, you know, kind of like what we were talking about in the third step, it's my mind tells me, well, if I just get all this stuff arranged, then I'll straighten out the rest, right? And this is actually saying, no, you've got it completely backwards. Once you straighten out spiritually, then all that other stuff starts to straighten out too, mentally and physically, right? Do you want to add to that?
Well, I was just coming from somebody that has tried to stay sober through the physical aspect, you know, guys I see in particular, coming into my life that deal with the same thing. They're gymming their way to sobriety, or they're therapy in their way to sobriety, and not that physical health or things like therapy are very good. Look at those things as like seasoning on the food, right? Like, I love yum yum sauce, right? And I put it on everything, right? But I don't want to make a whole meal out of yum yum sauce, and I would die if I just ate yum yum sauce, right? Like the meat of this program is the in the core of what we're dealing with is the spiritual malady and those things like the physical and the mental side are obviously important pieces. But if I solely focus on either one of those things, I'm going to be right back to where I started or worse. So yeah. I didn't understand that for a long time. It doesn't make sense to me. Didn't make for a long time. And I see a lot of guys in that same path get caught in that same thing where putting the focus on that, not understanding what it is we're really up against. I didn't either for a long time. So.
Yeah, I mean, how would we, right? Like, it's not like we were taught that in high school, you know? Like, you got to look within in order to get your life together. Like, how does that make any sense? Like, that's completely contradictive to everything I think I know about how to go about life, hence why I need to be here, right? Among many other reasons, too. But hopefully by this point in the game, like, we've kind of woken up to the fact that, like, we're not doing a good job of figuring things out on our own, right? Hopefully by the point that, you know, I'm like, all right, go write inventory. We're clear on that, you know? And I just want to bring up this story. I was sponsoring this woman. This was like last year, and she had around a year sober, and she had just started, you know, really getting into sponsorship herself. And she took on this woman who was just completely resistant to everything. So the woman I'm sponsoring is calling me all the time for advice on how to handle this. Finally, I got to a point where I guess they were talking about the fourth step and the girl on the receiving end of this information about how, you know, resentment is the number one offender and it kills us and so forth, and how, you know, we're going to talk about how it blocks us from the sunlight of the spirit and what that means. And the girl on the receiving end is like, I just don't know if I believe that. And I hate to sound cold, but when the woman I was sponsoring told me that, I said, you tell her. I don't care what she believes, right? Because if she had it figured out, right, she wouldn't need your 21-year-old ass to be sitting across the table from her with a big book when you're the one with a year sober and she can't put together 2 days, right? And it's so amazing how our minds, you know, and I had to step back and be like, okay, Megan, it's not like, you know, this is like common knowledge, you know, but sometimes I do get a little lit with this because I'm like, guys, here's the good news. We don't have to understand the intricacies of how all this works. All I need to know is that this book here is the only thing that seems to have made sense to help me understand this problem that I have, right? This book here thus far has not steered me wrong. This book here has thus far given a lot of people a new design for living that has allowed them to wake up and to experience God in a brand new way. So is it possible that maybe I don't fully understand what the purpose is in writing inventory and why resentments can have such a strong impact on my spiritual condition? And I don't even know what it means to have a spiritual condition yet. Is it possible that by taking these directions and following this outline, because it's going to give you some pretty strong statements to work with to help you start to learn exactly how your troubles are of your own making. And that's super uncomfortable, right? But, you know, again, hopefully by this point, there's an openness to do that, not because, you know, we're just so smart that we realized we needed help, but because the way we've been living life is so futile, right?
Lindsay says it all the time. She's right. Like, I wasn't entirely convinced that what y'all were selling was 100% true, but I was convinced I had alcoholism and that I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine being like you're driving around in a town and you're lost, right? You've been driving around. You pull over. You ask somebody, are you from here? And they're like, yeah, I've lived here my whole life. And they say, well, how do I get back to Sandy Springs? And they give you directions and you're like, yeah, like I can't see Sandy Springs from here. Like, how do I know what you're telling me is true? You know what I mean? When I get direction from someone who's knows where they're going, has been to where I'm trying to go, not question them at every step of the turn. If I'm truly convinced that I'm lost, I'm going to follow the directions that they're giving me to get back where it is that I need to go, regardless of the fact that I might not be able to see my destination from where I'm at. And that's right here where kind of that faith and action come together to convince that I'm fucked. And although maybe not 100% believe what you're telling me, what I'm doing hadn't been working, so we're going to give it a try, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, and don't forget, right, we talked about it a second ago, our goal now is to get unblocked, right? Like, what's blocking us from experiencing this God thing, you know? And it's the book. All I need to know at this point is the book is telling me resentment is one of those things, right? It will absolutely help block you from experiencing God. And more so, here's the best way I know how to describe it. And we're going to kind of like talk a little bit about our own personal inventories. But, you know, when I'm experiencing resentment, I'm experiencing separation. And what I mean by that is on some level, like I believe a lot of things that are not true that are creating a sense of separation between me and you. Like I'm going to pick on Tanya for a second. Like when I'm resentful at Tanya, what I don't realize is that energy that I'm experiencing towards this resentment at Tanya isn't just showing up with Tanya, right? These are ideas that are showing up in lots of relationships. They just happen to be very targeted on Tanya right now, right? Whatever she did that I didn't like, right? And so, you know, the separation sort of gets fueled by resentment. Does that make sense, right? So if I'm carrying all this, like, these ideas that are not working in order to create connectivity, right? It makes sense that what's going to happen is disconnect, separation. Does that make sense? You guys following me? You want to add to that? No? Okay. So the book then says that... it is plain that a life, I'm on 66 now, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness, like nowhere else, only there. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, that's me and you, right? Whose hope is in the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. My hope is in that, right? This business of resentment is infinitely grave. This is super lit, but we found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm are not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, like my mom, who's angry always. But for alcoholics, these things are poison, right? So what does that have to do with me staying sober? Why does that matter? Well, don't forget, right, we've already decided in A, B, and C that I, on my own power, cannot stay sober, and I had to find a power by which I can live, right? So it makes the most sense in the world that if this book is saying that by living in resentment and separation from my fellows and from God, that I could potentially drink again, makes sense, because that means I'm separate or believe that I'm separate from the power. The only thing in this that thus far has been presented to me is a solution to keep me sober, to keep me from returning to alcohol again. To the only thing it's saying I had to come to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. If I need to be restored to sanity, then that means that I need power. But this is saying I can't access that power so long as I'm harboring resentments that are uninvestigated. Does that make sense? You want to add to that?
Are we going to get into the actual...
Yes.
Are you going to go theater of the last style?
I don't know. I don't know that we'll... The mechanics of it, you mean?
No, not yet.
I think we'll just share experience. Okay. So how do we do that? Yep. That's what we're going to talk about now. How do we start to investigate these resentments? How do we start to get free of these resentments? Well, it goes on to say that we had to be willing to look at these resentments from an entirely different angle. That sounds simple in theory, but it's actually quite challenging.
Yeah.
when you really sit with, like, if Rush pulled some bullshit the other day, like, am I really willing to look at that from an entirely different angle? Which he does on a regular basis. That's my roommate.
But she never does.
No, that's right. Perfect. Perfect. So, am I really willing, right? And we'll probably share some stuff that's going to be kind of comical with you guys, but sometimes this stuff can really sort of dig deep to the point where it's like, I may not be willing. Let's talk about that. You know what I mean? But, yeah, so we have to start to... look at, how'd I get all the way over here? Referring to our list again. So by this point, we've already made a list of people we're resentful at. We're going to refer to the list again. We're going to put out of our minds, this is tough, guys, we're going to put out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We're going to resolutely look for our own mistakes, where we've been selfish, blah, blah, blah.
But they really hurt me.
But they really, like Brandon said, it's a tough thing. I mean, here's where, and I just want to say this before, we start sharing our own personal inventory. We're going to share some stuff with you, and it's going to sound like we're crystal clear with what was going on there, right? But the reality is, like, what it takes for me to get to a place where I'm honestly willing to see the truth, where I'm just, I'm willing. Like, God, help me see the truth. That's a prayer that I actually work with every time I sit down to write inventory, because I'm one of those, like, I don't wait until I'm actually going through the steps again before I write inventory. If I'm hooked on something that's, like, really eating my lunch, right, I'm going to go ahead and just put pen to paper and hopefully find somebody to read it to when necessary. This is an exercise that you can use while you're going through the steps the first time, the fifth time, or just, in day-to-day life, you got something that's just got you hooked. But it's tough. Like, I experience the power of this power that we're talking about when I experience truth. That's just how it works for me. So... you want to start with yours?
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is something I'm rarely able to do, even in this day, without getting an outside opinion on the issue. It's not like if I wouldn't have had a sponsor, I would have looked at some of these things, especially some of those. Because there's times, right, where it's pretty obvious that, like, I was the creator of this confusion and this problem. But there's situations where people did me, like, legitimate harm. Like, you know what I mean? And it's seemingly unprovoked. Sometimes people even are like random acts of violence or whatever the case may be, you know what I mean? And it wasn't like I just one day I'm sitting around, I'm like, you know what? Like, really, I'm the one that, like, this was of my own making. Or even though this problem wasn't, the way I've been responding to all the people in my life since then is really of my own making. I have to get some outside perspective on it. One of the points of having a sponsor, and be like she talked about in our walking around, going around throughout the day and the rest of life, a network of people around you that can help you get some outside perspective on it. Because I typically have gone through life having people that, that's what I thought a friend was, is when I call you and I'm like, you won't believe what Megan did. And they're like, yeah, screw Megan. Like, you know what I mean? I get the angry mob that backs me, and that's what that's what I did for my friends. You know what I mean? I'm gonna co-sign all your bullshit, and I need some people in my life, whether it's a sponsor or a network, that can help me see the whole picture. Because those people that co-sign my shit are enabling my death, really, or I'm enabling theirs when I do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple things that come up when in dealing with the resentment. So when I'm working with a guy, I'm telling him to make his list. Usually I have him go write out, the who or what he's resentful at and the reason why. That's typically the easy part of the resentment inventory, right? For most people, I can get a pretty big list out of that pretty quick. All I got to do is write down, Will, you know, he stole $20 from me when I was passed out on the couch. You know, Casey, I let him borrow my car and he brought it back wrecked. You know, whatever the case may be. Now, I get guys. I got a guy I'm working with. He's 30-something years old. He brings me back a list. He's never done inventory before. He's got seven things on there. I'm like, in 32 years, there's seven people or seven situations that you're resentful at. And he's like, well, I had a long, this is something I hear pretty often. It's not just with this person I'm referencing. I had a long list. I started writing some of them down. And, you know, like I had my mom down, but like I can't really be like resentful at her. You know what I mean? Like she left when we were 3 or 4, but you know, she was doing the best she could. And like when she came back in my life, I stole from her a lot and stuff. So it'd be dumb for me to be resentful at her. So well, we're not dealing with like a logic problem here. This isn't. The fact that you logically shouldn't have been resentful at her doesn't mean that I'm not resentful at her. You know what I mean? Alcoholism and addiction is not a logic problem. You know what I mean? And the other one that comes up is, well, there was one for me. It was my ex-wife. I hadn't seen my ex-wife in 7 years, and we'd been divorced for 12 years, I think at the time, 11 or 12 years when I did inventory on her. And I didn't have her down at first. I said, you know, I don't think people get this idea that a resentment has to be this thing where it's constantly in my mind. You're constantly on my mind for the harm that I think that you did to me. I didn't think about her really much at all. It had been so long since I'd seen her. And my sponsor at the time asked me, he said, you're not thinking about her that much, is fair. He said, if you were around her now, if for some reason, for whatever reason, she was back in your life, y'all were at work together, would this resentment that you say you don't have affect your behavior between you and her? And I said, well, started to think about it, and I was like, well, kind of got that feeling in my stomach, and I was like, well, yeah, she's a bitch. You know what I mean? Well, there it is, one. And he's like, two, is it possible that although you're not thinking about her, that the situation of, in this case, was, you know, I'd caught her cheating on me, that maybe it's affected every single relationship with every woman that you've had since then, up until this day. And that your problems in your current relationship and your last relationship is this unresolved resentment between you and her is affecting every aspect of your life, especially in your dealings in your romantic relationship. So logic and not in the front of your mind are not two good reasons not to put somebody down on here. I've got one that I was going to share. He's not in here, but he said I could share. Oh, there he is. It's Tarek. So this is one. This is a great example of one like that not being logical is not a good is not a good reason to not deal with some of this stuff. So the type of inventory I did was something called Theater of the Lie. It breaks down some of those different areas of self that are affected. We've got areas that come up like self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook. That's the different areas. And then pocketbook can be broken down by money and or time. We look at the idea that time is money. So when I came back in this time, when I had relapsed, I showed back up to, Pip's house. And I had shot dope the night before. It was my first time shooting dope in a year. I shot dope, I stayed up late, and I'd agreed to go to this, like, sober function, you know what I mean? I couldn't, like, just not show up, so I didn't think anybody would know, right? I'd shot dope one time. Nobody said anything to me that night. And the next day, Tarek gives me a call or a text, and he's like, you know, it's pretty apparent to me that you've been getting high, and I'm just worried about you, you know what I mean? I consider you a friend, like, we've developed this relationship, and I probably still have the actual text. It's probably funny if I put it at this point, but, like, I attacked him, you know what I mean? I knew he didn't have proof, too, so that was, you know what I mean? I didn't prove it. I ain't at the launching pad no more, motherfucker. You can't give me a drug test, cop. How dare you, you know what I mean? How dare you accuse me of getting high? Long story short, when I came back, like that was, I was angry and resentful at this man for accusing me of getting high. I was high. Like, I was high as fuck. And writing this out, so it's easy for me to see, like I said, it's pretty easy for people to get down the who and the why, like who am I resentful at in this situation? Tarek, why accusing me of getting high? let's start to look at some of these areas of self. And it's, because I've got these roles that I play. You know, it says, you know, we live a double, triple life. I've got all these different masks and roles I play. So in this self-esteem, as we start to look at the way I see myself that justifies me having this resentment. So under self-esteem, I'm just a sober individual living his life and becoming a victim of rumors. So I said, how dare you make these rumors about me? You've got no proof. Mm-hmm. How many other people have you told this shit? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm worried about how I look. Pride. Others should not question my program and my dedication and commitment to this process.
Yeah.
I'm high, right? Like, face high. Picked. Like, picked. Ambition. I want unquestioning respect from others.
Yeah.
I'm a man. You don't question me. If I say it, it's true. I got 30-something years showing about 87.9% of the time that's not the case. But security. I need people not to snoop in my personal affairs to be okay. I'm good. You know what I mean? What I tell you is good. You know, I'm good. No more than that. Personal relations. A man should have friends who don't make accusations against him. You know what I mean? We're friends. How dare you accuse me of... You know what I mean?
Accuse.
Pocketbook, time spent wondering who these rumors had been spread to. You know what I mean? I'm worried, I'm consumed with how I look to you. You know, the old age, I think a lot of us relate to that, you know, chameleons, right? I fit into whatever mold that I think you want me to be. Whether or not I like you at all, I might hate your guts, but I need you desperately to like me, you know? You want to go ahead and break down the fourth column, or you want to get into one or two first?
I think you're
first?
Doing great. We should keep up with yours.
Okay,
so
it's pretty easy to, at least at that point, and I had to have somebody guide me through the process. There's a format that we use to break down some of this. So a lot of times I'll go through that third column that I just described with a guy. In some cases. This is called theater of the lie because it kind of exposes the lie. Now, in a situation like this, right, pretty easy for the lie to be exposed, right? A sober individual living his life. Well, I was high as high can be. So, and some of these other things, when I get some direction on really seeing the way it is that I show up or what I expect from others or what I think I need to be okay, it begins to break down. Some real sick, like, patterns of thinking. You know what I mean? But in the fourth column, start to look at what they say. My part of it, it goes into four sections. Fear, dishonesty, selfishness, and self-seeking. Selfish and self-seeking seem similar, but with the selfish is the selfish is the attitude, and self-seeking is the actual actions that took place out of that. So the fear in this situation of him accusing me of being high, regardless of the fact that I'm actually high. Fear of looking less than, fear of being exposed, fear of losing position and importance, right? I built up this image of what you think I am. I'm this guy. I got a year chip hanging from my keychain. You know what I mean? Don't call me out. You know what I mean? Dishonesty. What was my dishonesty in this situation? Well, I lied about the fact that I was getting high. Dishonesty, I think, whether it's on like a nightly inventory or even in this type of inventory, I want to look at is like the time where you asked me a question and I intentionally deceived you. You know what I mean? But there's many times throughout the day or even in these situations where maybe a direct lie wasn't told. In this one, there was. But there's also delusion around a lot of situations. You know what I mean? And that's one thing where I was taught when I'm looking at the question of dishonesty, it doesn't have to be that outright lie like, what color shirt do you have on? Green. You know what I mean? No, but there's like, in this case, it was delusional to think that he was doing this to sabotage me, which is how I'm approaching the situation. He's trying to fuck me over. You know what I mean? The reality was it was somebody that had been a mentor of mine, a friend of mine, that cared about me, that saw that shit was about to get ugly and was trying to help me out. You know what I mean? But he's trying to sabotage me. He's fucking me over. You know what I mean? What was the selfish actions here, or the selfish attitude, I mean? The selfish attitude was that I should be able to do whatever I want without anyone calling me out on it. It goes back to that control, right? Like that I want to be able to do what I want, when I want it, and don't question or call me out on any of that. The self-seeking actions that came out of that were I sent some really hurtful texts to him. You know, I did that reverse psychology thing. Like, look, dude, I know you've been going through a lot, so like, I forgive you. But back the fuck up. I'm gonna pray for you. Lying to him, further separating, and so after that, like, I wasn't coming around anymore. I don't know who he told. Did he tell Megan? Did he tell Mike? You know what I mean? Further separating myself from him and others. She brought up that whole thing of separation. Well, here's a great example, right? At that point, yeah, things went full bore. It wasn't too long before it crashed and burned again. But so logic has nothing to do with that, right? If I logically, like, well, what if I don't put Tarek down, right, when I come to revisit my resentments? Well, I'm not going to put Tarek down. Like, I was high, so I had no reason to be resentful at him for accusing me of being high. Yeah, but I still was. You know what I mean? Like, that's my whole life is these things that don't, most of these were not logical, but yet they still affect me and how my interactions with everyone that I'm around, whether it's that specific person or not.
God, that's so good. So yeah. That really is like a perfect example of how resentments work. And, you know, so that's one of those. The book talks about the difference between fancied or real resentments, right? And, And that's one of those where it's like, that was obviously completely fancied, right? Like, he just made up this whole fucking saga around his friend asking him if he's okay. I actually literally just wrote a similar inventory last week. Somebody was joking with me and kept sending me texts like, are you okay? And it just bothered me so much. To the point I literally had to put pen to paper. Like, stop texting me. So it's stuff like that that comes up where it's like, there's no better way to really start to get in touch with what Jamie and Brittany were talking about, which is my troubles are of my own making, until you actually start putting pen to paper and that whole truth thing starts to come out, right? So when I'm looking at inventory, right, so I had one here. I don't have to go through the whole thing with you, but my mother has been a reoccurring resentment every single year, multiple times a year. It just keeps coming and keeps coming, and it feels the same almost every single time. And in some ways, right, like if I were sitting in front of certain individuals, I might have reasons, like a valid reason to maintain anger at this woman, right, the way that she behaves sometimes. And so none of that matters, right? Let's say you've got a real case made. Those are the tough ones. Like somebody blew it, you know, somebody just completely blew it on the other end. Or I believe that, you know, whatever. So let's say it's a real resentment for the sake of this conversation. It's really tough because then I get brought back to the, do I believe I'm an alcoholic? Do I really believe that? Do I really believe that no human power can keep me sober? Do I really believe that my hope is in the maintenance and growth of my spiritual condition? So therefore, do I really believe that this business of resentment is infinitely grave? Do I believe that I'm someone who can just walk around for years and years maintaining anger at certain individuals and cutting them out of my life? I see those memes on Instagram all the time. You know, if you got negative people in your life, cut them out. And I'm like, you know, I can't tell. I mean, I would have cut out so many. I would have no friends.
By myself.
I'd be by myself if I believed that when I believed everybody was doing something negative, I just cut them out, you know. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, right, my mom, she struggles a lot. She doesn't have access to the same tools. I could get into it. Doesn't matter. The cool thing about this, too, right, if you notice when Brandon wrote his inventory, he said, Tarek, accused me of getting high. He didn't get into the story. You know, his why are you resentful didn't tell this whole novel of like, well, when we met back in 2008, and, you know, he was a little condescending then, but, you know, comma. Fast forward, you know, it's like, no, I don't care about any of that. You know, let's just get down to, like, why are you resentful of Tarek, right? Let's look at that. Just target statement, you know? And then God, help me see the truth because we're diving in at this point and I need help to see it. Like, help me see
it happens.
Where my troubles are of my own making, right? So here's my mom, and my resentment here is that she's living such a pathetic life. Like, she just won't do anything to help herself, right? And here's me. I've made something of myself. Me. I did that. It goes on, you know, I could get into all of these, but I want to talk a little bit about this thing called the realization. So the realization is a really fun one. It's where this exercise, this format, this particular one, you don't have to do theater of the lie. He and I both just found it extremely effective, and a lot of people that we know found it extremely effective and really just digging into the truth, right? Here's the good news. Waking up to being in full, to taking full responsibility of your life actually is very freeing, because I don't have to wait for my mother to change in order to experience freedom, in order to connect with her, in order to love her. Right, she doesn't have to change at all. I can't get in touch with that until I do this process. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So realization is where I start to look at how have I exhibited the same behavior as my mother, right? And so here's what I wrote. I wasn't actually on the fast track to success until 8 years ago only, when grace entered my life and steered me in a whole new direction, right? So I've been sober for about 8 years. This is pretty recent. I fail to remember and stay present to just how beautiful my life is, and I tend to focus on what I need to change to be okay, because a lot of this is centered around my mother, who just completely, you know, she's just miserable all the time. Everything's wrong, right? And, you know, in her case, it usually revolves around men. She's just cycling through men. It may not be men, but everything else is up for grabs, right? So while I may not focus on my latest and greatest man in my life all the time, I absolutely focus on everything else that I need to fix. And it's really only this way of life that helps to recenter me, right? So this is me just looking at the realization. Now, sometimes if I look back and it's like, okay, let's say Brandon punched me in the face, I may have no realization that says, well, I've hit Brandon in the face before. Actually, I have, though. Oh, God, I forgot about that. So let's say I didn't know. Let's say Brandon legitimately hit me in the face, and then I had nothing to say, well, I've hit Brandon in the face. Okay, have you hit anybody else in the face? Right? Have you, you know, and then you can actually get down into those areas that that Brandon was talking about in the self-esteem. So I want others to do better for themselves. That's what I wrote against my mother. Do I do better for myself? Do I help others do better for themselves? Right? These are some of the questions that you can actually just sit with and ask yourself. Like, I'm over here crucifying my mother for not doing A, B, and C, but do I? Right? And so then you just start digging into it more and more. And for me, what happens is it just really starts to chip away at the things that are the lies that I'm telling myself that are keeping me in this perpetual state of separation from her. And as Brandon mentioned, these ideas tend to perpetuate in each of my relationships, right? So it's not just against my mother. Suddenly I find myself mad at Rush because he won't get out of bed at 8 a.m. and he should. You know, and I don't believe that, but, you know, so it's that kind of stuff. But I think we've, you know, I hope everybody feels clear on, like, how cool the resentment inventory can be. And not only cool, but vital, right? It is vital for me to get clear. I need help to get clear. I literally need the power of God to help show me the truth. And that's exactly what I experience when Penn gets to paper in this. So I guess we should talk a little bit about fear and
self. Yeah,
I
just want to say this isn't like they mentioned in the last session, this isn't an alcoholic or addict condition, it's a human condition. Mm-hmm. We started doing this little group when I was working at Cornerstone, where we'd listen to like a motivational talk, and it was the Tony Robbins talk and like a Wayne Dyer talk. It's going into the same thing. It was people like, if I've got to wait for everyone in my life to change to be okay, I'm never going to be okay. You know what I mean? The only problem with us is for us, this business is fatal, right? Because for us to hang on to this stuff means a needle or a bottle, which end all things worthwhile. We want to move into fear. Now, fear, when doing a list like this, like I said, with the fear in this Tarek situation, right, there was the fear of looking less than, fear of being exposed, fear of losing position, importance. So I can get some fears from that. When a lot of people I've heard, and I've even had done one like this, and they're like, we'll make a list of your fears, and it ends up coming up with things like, well, fear spiders, and I got fear clowns, and fear of police, or fear of being robbed, fear of going to prison. So I was talking about this with Carl the other day, and they're like, there's a difference, and maybe the line can get gray, but there's a instinctual fears, right? And there's these fancied fears. I don't know any amount of inventory or spiritual connection you can do that is going to, if you put a pistol in my face, that I'm not going to be scared. So I don't know, like, that writing about, well, somebody, you know, because I've been robbed, right? That pulling a gun on me, I'm scared of being robbed. Like, to this day, like, feel pretty connected these days. If you pull a gun on me at night when I'm coming out of a concert, like, I'm going to be scared. But my sponsor, the last time I went through, and he didn't tell me what we were doing when he had me do this assignment. And he called me Mr. Right Answer, right? Because I've always got to have the right answer, because I need you to like me, right? So, well, why are we doing this? And he's like, just do this. So what he had me do, he said, I want you to make a list of all the things that you weren't doing that you should have been doing. And I said, what, leading into my relapse? And he's like, sure. He's like, or you can put down all the things you should be doing that you aren't doing. And I said, dude, I could make a list 100 pages long. You know what I mean? He said, no, you can't. He said, it'll be like 10, 15 things. And I said, why are we doing this? And he said, just make the list. You know what I mean? Okay. So some of the things that came out for me were, so things I wasn't doing that I should have been doing leading into my relapse, or that I am not doing that I need to be doing. So I put down, you know, just as generic as I could. Working the 12 steps, calling my network, being honest, staying clean, paying bills, obeying the law, prayer, meditation, going to meetings, spending time with my family, being a good employee, putting recovery first, treating women or my girlfriend with respect. That basically summed up most of what I should have been. And he goes, okay. I'm like, why did I make this list, right? He said, when you're not doing those things, you're acting out of fear. What is the fear that's behind each one of those things? So then I have this list, right, that's instead of being these instinctual fears that are not really affecting much of anything, because I'm still scared of spiders to this day, it's actually things that are affecting my day-to-day interactions with the people around me, with the people that are closest to me in my life. And so he had me put those fears through the same process that I went through the resentments with. So let's just take one of those, calling my network, right? So one of the things I wasn't doing was, right, calling the guys that I'd established relationships with, the guys that I'd actually became close to. Because once again, like, after that situation happened with him, right, I can't call anybody, right? Like, there was this, is Brandon getting high? Is he not? Like, I got all these things playing up in my head. So in that situation, why was I not, you know, calling the people that were close to me? As well says, you know, I'm a strong, competent man anyway who doesn't need to get vulnerable with other men. I got this idea of what a real man is, and it doesn't involve being vulnerable with you. You know what I mean? Pride. Others should see me as superior and as a man who doesn't struggle through life, right? I don't know if it was something that was taught to me or something that I was picked up along the way or a combination of both, but these deep-seated ideas and beliefs I've got of what a real man is does not involve struggle. It involves, you know what I mean, you look up to me. I'm up here, you're down there, I'll help you out if I get some time, you know what I mean? Ambition. I want to be able to go through life without having to reveal my weaknesses to others. I need to be self-reliant to be okay. A man should be able to handle his own problems. Sex relations, weak men don't get women. And then breaking it down with a fourth column again, the same way. It was delusional to think anyone that can go through life completely on their own. Delusional to think when people struggle that they aren't spiritual. You know what I mean? To this day, I still get caught up in this idea of what a real man's supposed to be and get fearful of, like, revealing the things that I'm going through sometimes. But it's that weird conundrum, because the people that I look up to the most, that I've gotten the most from out of this program, and the people that I connect to the most are the ones that are sharing with me authentically about the shit they're going through. And not just to vomit in the meeting, but, like, I'm experiencing this, I'm struggling with this, and this is how I'm getting through it without a needle, without a bottle, you know? Fear?
I think you got it.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is one of those, the book uses, like, really colorful language at times, right? The evil and corroding thread, the fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And especially with these ideas, I mean, I only work with guys, but, like, guys in particular, I ain't scared of shit. You know what I mean? I'm scared of the police, and I'm scared of overdosing. That's it. You know what I mean? When I really start to break, I'm able to break down some of this stuff of, like, going through, like, fear of looking weak, fear of losing position and respect, fear of not being able to quickly change the way I feel, fear of experiencing the ups and downs of life, fear of not getting to do the things that I want to do, fear of not being in control, fear of not having the final say, fear of wasting my time, fear that God isn't listening. There's all these things, and that in my experience and going through it this way with Him were a lot more valuable than some of those, like I said, instinctual fears that I think on some level are probably never going to go away. You know what I mean? That fight or flight response is going to occur in certain situations. But what fears are affecting the way that me and you are able to relate to each other on a daily basis?
I do want to add to fear. Okay. So that was actually an exercise that I'd never heard of before, but I think that's a really cool one to try. So I'd definitely get with him about, you know, those instructions if you're interested. And so just to briefly touch on this, I once heard a speaker say that whenever I'm in fear, it's because I'm relying on self, right? And, you know, that seems like a very simplistic way to put it, but there's a lot of truth behind it. You know, I'm not very big on, like, generalizations. I'm one of those people that believes faith and fear can coexist, right?
Yeah.
And so that said, I love where the book talks about how self, you know, once again, it brings us back to, wasn't it because self-reliance failed us in talking about fear? Self-reliance was as good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. And then it talks about this better way, right? So again, we're constantly getting pointed back to, don't forget this is about you and your relationship with God, right? And it does give us a really cool prayer to work with. It's one I still use to this day. When fear shows up, we ask God at once to remove the fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be, and we start to outgrow fear. Because if you think about why fear exists, right, it's usually very, once again, centered around me, myself, and I, what I think I need to be okay. And if I don't get it, I'm very scared, you know, whether it's, you know, a material item, which usually it's not. Usually it's something, you know, a little deeper than that. And so when I'm asking and inviting a power greater than me to redirect me back to, okay, God, no, really, but what would you have me be? Not what do I think I need to be so Brandon thinks I'm cool, but like, God, what would you have me be? So suddenly it takes all the power out of, you know, I don't want to say suddenly as if you say this prayer and it's like, yeah, boom, you're free. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. But it's like I little by slowly start getting redirected to like, okay, wait, so if I'm not over here just like anxiously worried whether or not Brandon thinks I'm cool, right, all right, how can I be present? And all of a sudden I notice Tanya over there, over there is kind of just sitting by herself. I'm like, hey, girl, what's up? You know, and suddenly it's like, boom, we're done with that, moving on. And so that's the cool things that we start to experience as we investigate fear.
I think the big reason that they say, you know, this is supposed to be vigorous action, done it quick, that talked about when it's gone through slowly, it starts to become this, you say, intellectual exercise, right? Like if I think that because I wrote all this stuff down, and true, I learned some stuff about myself, right? But if I spend too much time on this, I start once again looking at AA as like a self-help program.
Mm-hmm.
Like I learned all this cool stuff about myself. Knowledge is the answer. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now that I see the way that I've been showing up, I'll be able to treat Will differently now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep this with me. I'm going to keep it in my pocket right here. And when people do these similar situations, I'm going to pull it out. I'm going to be like,
yeah.
Well, real men are actually sensitive and vulnerable, and I'll be able to authentically show. No, it's like I can maybe I can for a week or a month. You know what I mean? I've been able to do that. I've been able to fight alcohol and heroin like that before. You know what I mean? But self-reliance fails me. So this idea that this new knowledge that I've gained is going to be enough to keep me from showing up the same way. Try that. You know what I mean? This is a program of reliance on God. That's what we've got to offer here. So less of an intellectual exercise, and I think that's why, like she was saying, taking the top 10 on these situations rather than having a list of 400 things is just because the names will change, but the situations and the way I'm showing up start to look the exact same. When I look back at some of this stuff, the only thing that's different is the name on the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just reiterates my need for this power in my life? It's not an intellectual exercise. It's one more example of my desperate need of of some power, that I can't do this on my own. It's a whole book worth of examples of why self-reliance failed me.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so good. And I guess, I don't know how much time we have. I know we're sort of off, but just to spend a few minutes on this too, there's three parts to the inventory process. We spend a lot of time on resentment, talking about fear. That's the second part of the inventory process. And then it goes into sex conduct. And,
dun,
you know,
dun,
I know. It's one of those things where it feels a little freaky. I was like, so what am I supposed to make a list of, like, all the men I've had sex with? Because,
right.
Like, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Like, where do we begin? Oh, we do? Okay.
We're at 50 minutes.
Oh, so we still got, like, 10.
Yeah, 10.
Because we were owed an hour. So.
We made your segment, like, 2 hours long, so you can do what you want.
All
right.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
I was like, oh, I gotta go.
Yeah.
no. So yeah, but no, it's not about that at all. Actually, I find this style of inventory, because it's just a little bit different. The questions are designed a little bit differently. There is a bit of an emphasis on people that you have engaged in sexual relationships with, right? But I don't want to know about that one night stander. Don't really care about him. I want to know about that guy that you dated for 3 years while you were dating that other guy at the same time. I want to know about both of them. I put them on there. Let's talk about them, you know. And for me, you know, that's just around the sexual relationships. I also find this questionnaire very helpful in other relationships. Like, I've put my mother on conduct inventory before. Because it's not about sex. We're not getting down to how you like to have sex, right? Like, whether you like BDSM or, like, it has nothing to do with that, right? This is about our conduct in those relationships. Because if you're anything like me, I've seen the worst of myself in those relationships sober. I can get by with, like, you know, like, Rush and I have a terrific friendship, right? And we live together. We don't really fight, right? But the minute, if he were to become something more than that, right, all of a sudden, all this stuff comes pouring out of me, these expectations on him that I didn't even know. Like, where did that come from? Like, we've been friends for years. Why all of a sudden is this here, you know? And so, and all these, like, little behaviors start coming out of me that I didn't even know were possible. So this is where this inventory becomes applicable, because, you know, while, and it also helps me to cover relationships, I may not be resentful at certain people, and they may not have made it to the resentment inventory, but it helps me to sort of cover those people that were still significant relationships, and it would be worthwhile to investigate how I showed up in those. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I was just, the delusion, if you will, or the fog that can be between, because even by this point, maybe your sponsors help guide you to see some stuff about yourself or the way you show up that maybe you were blind to. But in these, seems like in these sexual relationships more than any other, is where guys that I work with seem to have the toughest time, where there can be some, like, it can be pretty apparent, like, some of the harms they've caused. If I'm looking at one example where, you know, he had stole, you know, savings from the family and left kind of the wife and the kids high and dry as he went out on another run. But she had cheated on him, you know what I mean? And so there was no connection between what he had done, because this bitch cheated on me, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, but didn't you tell me that, like, you had, you know, you cleaned the bank account out of about 10 grand and had, like, disappeared, and, you know, you didn't call him for a couple months, and when you washed back up, you know, you were basically headed to prison with, like, 9 felonies, and you didn't see him, and they had to sell the house, and yeah, but you know what I mean? But like, look what she did, and you know what I mean? And it gives us a once again, clear-cut instructions, and it's on page 69. Isn't that the list to review the...
why did you bring that up?
Just if they need to find it. It says we reviewed... Well, I like what she said, too, about in a general sense. We get this, and I thought, like, they said, make a list of, you know, the a sex conduct inventory. And I had this long list, and the first sponsor I worked with, and he's like, yeah, take that home and throw that away. I don't need a, like she said, I don't need a list of, like, every woman that you've slept with or every man that you've slept with, right? It says right here, we reviewed our conduct over the years past. Where had we been? And they give us 9 questions. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who had we hurt? So that could be her, or that could be her family. That could be any number of other people. I mean, my actions don't just affect this person that I'm in the relationship with. This is that question number four is going to come in handy too on the amends list, right? I'm going to already have a jump start on people that I've harmed that I can get the business of righting the wrongs of my past. But self, where have I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who have I hurt? What I found this time through, rarely was it just the person that I was in the relationship with. Had situations, right, where parents of the girl that I was with when I was younger, like, called me and my family. I had this, like, mini intervention of, like, we know what you do. You're dating our daughter. We don't want people like you around her. You know what I mean? Like, leave her alone. Mm-hmm. So for me to say that I only harmed her with my actions when the parents are getting involved, so in my opinion, I owe them an amends as well. You know what I mean? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault, and what should we have done instead? There's 9 areas that we're going to look at there. We got this all down on paper and looked at it. Are you going to bring up any specifics or just want to generally?
No, yeah. I mean, the cool thing, too, is it's like, you know, when it's asking where and did you, this isn't like yes or no, right? Mm-hmm. Like, did you arouse jealousy? Yeah. Okay, but how? Like, what did that look like? You know, let's talk about that for a second. Like, were you, you know, pissed off at your... Y'all, I've been on some petty stuff before. I hope Brandon, like, brought some actual inventory to look at, but I've been on some petty stuff before. But, you know, I've even had to look at it even when I wasn't on petty stuff, right? Like, where did I arouse jealousy? Well, I choose work over everything else every time, right? And so that can create a rift in a relationship, right? You know, there's other things that can arouse jealousy. So you really get to kind of dive in and look at, like, no, how did you show up in that relationship, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just pick one real quick. Most of mine, so I want to bring this up real quick. If you've never done an inventory before, then looking at it just the way that it says in the book about the people who you're involved sexually with is probably, I would say, the most effective way to do it. I know when I came back in this time, I'd been clean for a year. I'd relapsed. The relapse was relatively short, and I came back in. There was only one person that I had had sex with in the time from when I had done my first inventory to when I came back in. So it was more of what she's discussing as a conduct inventory. The people that were involved in my life, I can put through the same set of questions and get some clarity on. But with the girl that I was in a relationship with, it says, "For under selfish, you know, where had I been selfish? I wanted a trophy girlfriend. I wanted more sexual intimacy than she did. I pursued her while she was still with her boyfriend. Dishonesty, I lied about my using. I stole her pills and her family's pills. Inconsiderate, made jokes about her eating. I pushed her to have sex without a condom. Who did I hurt? Her, her family, her boyfriend. That was an interesting amends with her boyfriend. That it's another story. Jealousy, coaching my ex while me and her were still in a relationship. So I'm in this relationship with this woman, but the girl that I was with before it, I'm a coach. It's my job, right? Acting all indignant, right? But if the roles were reversed, I'm like, no, you're not talking to him. You know what I mean? Where did I arouse suspicion? Acting funny after I relapsed and lying about it, being high the whole time we were together. She started to notice those little things, you know what I mean? Bitterness, when she found out that I'd been using, that caused bitterness. When she discovered that I wasn't the man that I was portraying to be or the man that she thought that I was. Where was I at fault? Lying about clean time, using while we were together, pressuring her to have sex without a condom, stealing pills from her and her family. What should I have done instead? I mean, some of these situations is pretty clear. Been honest about where I was at in life, not pressured her, not stole from her. Some of these situations, I found the thing that I should have done was just not been in the relationship at all. You know what I mean? But it'll be different. What it says is, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. The book goes into it before this, at the end of 68 and the beginning of 69. We got people on all extremes of the scale when it comes to sex. It's not really up to me to tell you what's right and what's wrong. If you're a a polygamist out on a farm in Utah somewhere, more power to you. But whatever your ideal is, we subject each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not, right? So I didn't really see the point of this, right? And then, and I think even when the first time someone, I think it was Tarek, had me write down a sex ideal. Was like, I'm not here to tell you if your sex ideal is right or wrong as long as you're not harming others. But what I am going to do is, as we're in this, having this relationship with each other, is when things come up, I am going to ask you, is the way that you're showing up lining up with what you said your ideal was? So it gives us another point of accountability, if you will, that if you're telling me that you want to be in this one, you know, monogamous relationship, and you want to, you know, you don't want to date, you don't want to sleep around, that this is what you're aiming for, and then you come at me 6 months later with the problems you're having in your dating life because you've got three women you're hollering at and they're angry at you, then we're going to say, well, I don't, if dating is what you want to do and you want to date multiple women and they're all clear on that, then fine. But what you told me, what you said in your sane and sound sex ideal is not that. You know what I mean? So another point of accountability or honesty, just another tool that we've got in the tool belt. We remembered that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever, you know, it says right here, it's not supposed to be any specific ideal, but whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. It says this right there, we're not going to do it perfectly, right? We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. If you notice, those questions, those nine questions, are real similar to kind of what takes place in the resentment inventory anyway. A little bit more detailed, I think, because like she said, there's a lot more emotions and involved in those type of interactions.
Yeah, and I just wanted to briefly touch, you know, I think Brandon's done an excellent job. I love that he brought some of that inventory to share with you guys, because there's just no better way to really, that's where we need help, right? Because we can't always see ourselves clearly in how we show up. Like, you know, I just want to reference, like, some personal examples, too, like arousing suspicion, right? Like, I was in a relationship with somebody previously who experienced a lot of insecurity, jealousy, etc. My way of trying to manage that scenario is, like, if somebody texts me that I knew he'd be upset about, I delete it from my phone, right? I just delete it, and not because anything, you know, nefarious happened, but just because I didn't, right? In my mind, I just didn't want to deal with it, right? So these are some of the things, like, how did you arouse suspicion? Did anything wrong actually take place? No. But that's a surefire way to arouse suspicion, right? Doing things like that, even, like, low-key, you know? And then kind of going into the what should I have done instead, right? Like, that's a really fun one to sit with and to really invite, you know, like, once again, God help me see the truth. Like, what should I have done instead, right? Like, show me. And it's not, you know, it can be as simple as, like, you shouldn't have gotten near that relationship with a 10-foot pole. But I find it more helpful to really dig into it and be like, no, what could I have done instead? Like, what would that have looked like specifically, right? If I was like this, you know, if I was in an ideal human status, and it's like genuinely like, how would I have liked to show up in that scenario? You know, let's play that tape and really sit with it. And that can help form a really cool ideal. Like, one of mine was, you know, I would like to be someone who supports and promotes growth in others with no demand that it profits me. That's a big one for me, because in past relationships, I'm that person who goes in, you come home in a bad mood or something, and I'm like, let's talk. Come on. Yeah. And I think I'm being helpful. I think that I'm being, like, good girlfriend, right? I think that I'm, you know, just trying to, like, help support my partner. Truth is, I don't want to deal with your energy. I want to go to dinner, have a nice night. I'm not prepared for this. I'm annoyed that you're in a bad mood, and therefore, right? So I'm not really, like, there's no, like, altruism going on here. There's no selflessness in me trying to help you. I want you to snap out of it so we can move on with our night. And I couldn't see that at the time. And then when he's like, I don't want to talk about it, I'm like, okay, no, you're confused. We're going to, you know? It's like, That helps no one, right? So these are just some of the examples. Like, I may not really experience that side of myself, in all relationships, right? But I am going to experience it in a relationship. I say going to, who knows if that will be my behavior again, maybe, but you know, I may experience that again in relationships that I'm more attached to, right? I experience those aspects of myself where I can really see a lot of truth. And again, just to remind you guys, none of this, you know, we're kind of talking about a lot of funny things. I know that when we dig into selfishness, we may have really pulled some fuck shit in the past, right? Like, there may be some really, like, yeah, who knows, years of affairs. I've heard all kinds of stuff, right? And this is not an exercise to go into, like, self-loathing. I can't believe I did that. Of course you did, right? Because everything we're talking about everything we're talking about this morning are things that have been blocking us. Once again, just to bring it full circle, things that have been blocking us from experiencing that power, the only power that's going to restore us to sanity, the only power that's going to rocket us into a different way of living, into a different way of reacting to life. Everything that's blocking us from awakening spiritually, right? These are the things. These are why we have to stay clear. Why we have to first get clear and then continue to stay clear, right? So, you know, to Brandon's point, when he was kind of going into the sex stuff, like, I'm not somebody who can get away with carrying on three different relationships and expect to stay sober. Right, I'm coming up on 9 years sober this year. If I tomorrow decide that I want to go get into, you know, four different relationships at the same time and not tell any of them, that seems extreme. I can't guarantee what's going to happen. Right, all I know is the amount of dishonesty and selfishness that would be driving me to do that would be pretty real and painful. Right, and so I'm not saying like you're terrible if that's what you're currently engaging in by any means. All I'm saying is, the whole double life thing is incredibly painful and counterproductive to the goal of staying awake spiritually and staying sober and staying connected to that power that we're talking about, right? So I'm not somebody who can get away with living that kind of lifestyle. So when this book talks about is it selfish or not as it pertains to sex, those are questions I have to take seriously, right? And I have to stay in close connection with the people around me. And it doesn't matter how much time I have sober, and it's not about are you good, bad, are you right or wrong. This is just about staying well, staying sober, helping others. Like, let's not forget that that's really the end goal here. It's not about transforming you into a perfect human, right? It's just about those principles. It's really that simple. This is just a baseline for living that we can continuously refer to that will help us to continue to evolve. And when we do fall short, we have some things that we can participate in to help us overcome that, right? So,
last thing I wanted to mention before we close it out is that I would have to assume that it's somewhat like this on the women's side, but I've worked with guys, so I know that in the sex portion of the inventory, if something is going to get left off, like intentionally left off, it usually comes in the sex side. Most guys, like, by the time you wash up into a room, a CA or HA, you might have done some sexual activity to support your habit in one way or another that you're ashamed of, or some stuff happened as a child that maybe you had no control over. Any sort of thing runs a scale where the shame and guilt that comes along with those things runs pretty deep. Typically, it's things that most of us have done maybe to one degree or another, so I think that this in sponsoring other men, my willingness to be really authentic with those things that even to this day it's really not like fun for me to talk about, frees it up for the guy sitting across the table from me to feel okay sharing about that stuff too. When it goes into the fifth step, you know, they're going to talk about, is there anything you've left off the list? That's usually the stuff that ends up getting left off. Well, and so if I am at this point where I'm too sober to still be able to bear my soul or some of the stuff that I went through with a guy sitting across the table from me, how do I expect him to be able to get real and authentic with me about some of that stuff that he's never told a motherfucker in his whole life, you know? And in closing, once again, just to reiterate the fact, if you hadn't heard us yet already, this isn't a self-knowledge, self-help exercise to help us learn how to act better in the future. It says we treat it like we would any other problem, right? And what does that mean? It says In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter, right? Just putting it back on God. Does that mean, oh, I don't need to talk to the people that I'm close to about it? No. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. It goes back to, in this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. So cool, you made a nice list, you saw some stuff about yourself that maybe you didn't see before. Still couldn't do it on my own, still can't do it myself, even with this nice fancy list, right? This isn't a list, so I can act better. It's a list to reiterate my need for God, for this power in my life. That's all I got. If you have already made a decision and an inventory, you've made a good beginning. Once again, we've just begun. So,
all right, thanks, guys. Thank
you. 110. The rest of the